Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're talking about safe boating tips for waterfall hunting to begin the show today. And great to have back Lieutenant Darren Kuhn in the studio with us. He's the Boating Law Administrator in the Division of Public Safety and Resource Protection at our Wisconsin DNR. And as we talk with Darren, I hope you'll join in. How are you staying safe this waterfall season? Stories that you might tell relating to this. What are you looking forward to during the season? Let us know the safety equipment you've got on your small boat. Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or you can send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. Lieutenant Darren Kuhn, welcome back. Good to have you with us again.
Pleasure to be here. It's nice to be in the studio.
It's good to have you in the studio. And, you know, we talked about boating safety during the summer, but the fall is probably just as important, or maybe even more important, to keep those safety tips in mind.
You know, I don't know if I could say it's more important. It's definitely important, and it seems to go unnoticed. You know, we in Wisconsin, we think of our boating season from Memorial Day to Labor Day, and that might be for, you know, the recreational boater, but that certainly doesn't touch spring fishing or fall hunting or even fall fishing. The hunting season's and some of the boats that our duck hunters go out in are a lot smaller than what you might see during recreational season. So it's good to refresh some minds and talk safety when it comes to duck hunting. And duck hunting's my passion. I love duck hunting. So not only is it safety messaging, but it's fun to talk about.
We have Pete in Eau Claire with a little story that might relate to this about fishing from a small boat. Let's go to Pete. Hi, Pete.
Not much of a duck hunter. I'm mostly more into upland game, but I am a muskie fisherman, and I used to have a 16.5-foot bass boat, nice stable platform, but my lifestyle, my job prevented me from using it as much as I wanted to, so I sold it. And a couple of years ago, bought a small 14-foot John boat. Mostly I fish the lower Chippewa, below Eau Claire, so it's kind of good for that water. However, 2 weekends ago, we were up in Eagle River with the National Open Muskie Tournament fishing Kentuck. Kentuck is a 1,000-acre lake with about a 2-mile fetch on it, if not even longer. And we did have quite a windy day one day with waves. I'm sure they were at least 2 feet and quite nerve-wracking in the boat. You know, we had to go slow, you know, quarter into the waves. We didn't want to be sideways in them. But the beam on the boat's only 40 inches, so actually a legal muskie in that lake is as wide as the boat is. But, yeah, a small boat. A little bit nerve-wracking in that windy, wavy water.
Yeah. Well, it can lead to a lot of problems, those waves. And, you know, 2-foot waves, I mean, you do a lot of work around Lake Michigan, and the waves get a lot bigger than that even.
Considerably bigger, especially in the fall. And that story, I mean, you're not alone with that story, whether it's hunting or fishing. And, you know, just to take it a step further, you know, a lot of times our duck hunters are going out, you know, before sunrise, and they're trying to navigate those rough seas in little boats. A 14-foot John boat is pretty typical what you would see from the duck hunting public, and if not smaller, with skiffs and kayaks. And
why would, you know, there's people listening who aren't hunters or duck hunters, why, and they're wondering, well, why the heck would you use a small boat like that? So why a John boat? Maybe explain that.
You know, and I think a lot of it depends on where you're hunting, but a lot of our waterfowlers are hunting in very shallow, marshy conditions, trying to get maybe from the boat landing to those marshy conditions. A lot of our ducks in Wisconsin are dabbling ducks or puddle ducks, and literally they tip them from the floating position. They tip themselves over and eat from the bed, you know, the vegetation that's growing up. Very shallow areas with the big boats, you can't get into those shallow spots. You can't get into those cattail marshes or those backwater sloughs where the ducks congregate. Those 14-foot small John boats or those really shallow draft boats are very common. The problem is you got to get to those shallows first. And a lot of that entails going across open water. And with windy, wavy conditions, which is typical of our falls, it's dangerous. And then you think about all the stuff that a duck hunter has. You know, you can just think about what you might carry with you if you're going to spend a day on the lake. But now you throw in 24 decoys and you throw in a 100-pound Labrador retriever and all your shells and all the food that you might want to take because you're spending the whole day out there on this 14-foot boat or less. And now we have and your hunting buddy. You know, you throw in the weight of your hunting buddy in there. We have situations, too, where we very easily could overload these boats, make them far less stable than they were designed to be. And now we're going out in rough fall-like weather.
You've got some problems. And you were telling me a story about a guy who was out. Maybe just relate that story.
Yeah. Young adult. A couple years ago in Manitowoc County, went out duck hunting in his kayak with his golden retriever. And they were in, tucked back in the vegetation, but deep water, over your head, deep water. And the shot at a duck, dog broke, wasn't prepared for what was coming next, and the kayak capsized. And he had his waders on. And if you're not familiar with waders, they're, you know, generally neoprene or something that keeps the water out. But if you fill over the top of them, they're usually about chest high, chest waders, and that's just going to act as an anchor. Yeah. And it did just that. It pulled the gentleman under. He was able to get his waders off, but it was too late. He ended up drowning. And his life jacket that he should have had at least on the boat and preferably be wearing was on the floorboard of his pickup. You know, it's not going to do him a whole lot of good there. And a terrible tragedy, a loss in that small community where he was from. And there's so many stories. Most of our boating fatalities this summer from recreational season have been drownings where people aren't wearing their life jackets or in some cases don't even have their life jackets. And when I see a lot of duck hunters out in the field, they may have their life jackets, but they're undoubtedly tucked under everything, you know, and it's one thing to have them in a compartment, but now you throw 24 decoys and a couple blind bags and a couple shotguns and your dog, try to get to those life jackets. We just ask, you know, one, have them, be legal, have your life jackets, have them readily accessible, but wear them. You know, if you're going out early morning, late night, or anytime you're going out for hunting, you've got your hunting gear. You got a heavy jacket, generally. You know, not you would never know right now. I mean, it's still 90 degrees in September. But once we get into regular waterfall season, which is right around the corner, temperatures are going to change. Water temperatures are going to change, and wearing your life jacket is really important.
A little bit of an aside, but is there a state that requires people to wear life jackets, not just have them in the boat?
Some states do. I don't know of any Midwestern states, but there are definitely some states that require life jackets on different types of craft. Wisconsin requires life jackets when on a jet ski. So, I mean, we're on that cusp, but I don't know if we'll ever see that. But there is definitely some states across the country that do require in different situations. I know some require it for power boats if you're X miles offshore, or small craft, you know, if you're out on a kayak, and some required on paddle craft. If you're on a paddle board, then you're required to wear a life jacket. And Wisconsin is still standing with you're required to have it and have it readily accessible in case you need it. But the department and our staff and everyone that has to investigate these crashes and have to relay these stories to families, We ask you to take it a step further. Wear your life jacket. For hunting, there's all sorts of shapes and sizes. They come in camouflage now. So instead of wearing your favorite hunting coat, make your favorite hunting coat your life jacket. So there's really no reason not to have them or have them out, and really no more reasons why not to wear them when you're out there.
Somebody is just wondering, how do you tell if your boat is overloaded?
Well, they'll be every boat under 20 feet should have a capacity plate on it. And that capacity plate is generally a yellow label that's permanently affixed. There's some might have them riveted to the side, generally yellow in color. And it tells you the number of people. It tells you your motor horsepower. It tells you the weight. So you sort of have to figure it out. I don't know if I'd ask my buddy how much he weighs, but you can figure out how much you weigh or guesstimate and figure out how much, you know, looking at them, how much they weigh. And then you figure it out. I mean, most people know how much their dog weighs. And there's always going to be a number of people, horsepower, and then a total weight. And that includes everything. That includes your people. That includes your decoys. That includes your cooler. Whatever you may have on board all goes towards that weight. And if you're overloaded, one, it's a violation of law, but it's a violation of law because it's a major safety concern. When you overload your boat, it goes beyond manufacturer recommendations and stability, and you're more likely to capsize or sink, especially if you get into some rough water.
So what about balancing? You know, I can remember back a long time, I was hunting with a guy who had a John boat, and it was a small one. I don't remember it's tippy.
Yeah.
How do you, any tips for balancing?
When I've hunted out of boats, I've generally stayed seated, especially, you know, when shooting. For the safety of it, because it is so tippy. One, if you don't practice with that tip, and you don't go to the range and set some sort of boat on tire inner tubes or something to give you that bouncing feeling, you're probably not going to be that accurate to begin with. And while it's a little more uncomfortable to shoot from a sitting position, it's far more stable. So I guess I would just have hunters that are, especially those smaller boats, that you can practice. You can go to the trap range or the skeet range and sit in your layout blind or sit on a lawn chair and just practice shooting your clay targets, and that you can work on your marksmanship skills. So I don't ever recommend anyone standing up in the boat, especially a tippy boat that you might use for waterfall hunting. But to go right along with that, I would caution people, make sure everyone knows what's going on. We had another incident, not all that, probably 4 or 5 years ago now, where the hunters thought everyone was going to sit down to shoot, but one stood up and ended up, it was a fatality, ended up getting shot by his buddy because he was expecting him to shoot sitting down and he shot standing up. And it was terrible. It was awful. And it was just a miscommunication. And, in the hunting world, it's always plan your hunt your plan. Well, that goes with duck hunting too, especially when you've got your buddy, or a couple buddies all in that close proximity with shotguns, shooting at a flock of birds or a single, whatever may be. So I would recommend sitting in the boat to combat that stability issue. But however you're going to do it, make sure everyone in the boat knows what's going on, or the blind.
Lieutenant Darren Kuhn, our guest today, boating law administrator in the Division of Public Safety and Resource Protection for our Wisconsin DNR. We're talking about boater safety and zeroed in on duck hunting because, the season's right here. The early season's upon us, as a matter of fact. Questions for him or maybe an experience to share, I hope you'll join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us the email address ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Clara Neipert is our producer today, Trina LaSousa, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Taking a look at duck hunting and boater safety with our guest today, Lieutenant Darren Kuhn of the Wisconsin DNR. It's great to have Darren back. And as we talk with him again, join in with your own questions, comments, or maybe your own experience to share. Number to call, 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. Aside from, everybody should have life jackets. What other safety equipment should hunters keep on board with them?
You know, all the same stuff that you would need for your recreational boating. Life jackets, obviously, is paramount. You have to have them. It's going to save your life. But don't forget about your fire extinguishers. A lot of duck boats are going to have enclosed compartments or floors where gasoline vapors can get up into. So fire extinguishers are needed depending on the size of the boat and maybe a throwable. So if your boat's 16 foot or greater, you need that throwable flotation device. And a big one, which it's actually great that you brought it up, are boat lights. You know, we go out, waterfowl hunters are going out before sunrise, season ends at sunset, so they're coming in after dark. And anytime you're operating a motorboat from sunset to sunrise, that those periods of darkness, you need your boat lights. And what we're really seeing a lot of, and it's not just the waterfowl hunters, it's just becoming increasingly more popular with waterfowl hunters, are these white LED light bars. We see them on ATVs. We see them on bow fishing boats. And believe it or not, it's actually illegal to use those big light bars that take away from your navigation lights. And a lot of times boaters think that boat lights are there to aid the hunter or aid the boater in seeing, and they're not. They're actually just the opposite. Boat lights are designed for other boaters to see them and know which direction. That's the specific reason that the boat lights are red and green on the bow of the boat. So generally speaking, if an oncoming boater sees that red light, that means he's got to stop, just like traffic signals. He stops, the other boat has the right of way. Conversely, if coming from the right side of the boat, you'll see the green light, which means, okay, I've got the right of way, and that other boat's got to heed too. Problem is, when you have those big white LED light bars, they're great for helping you see where you're going in the dark, but it just blinds the other boat traffic. And a lot of times there aren't, you know, you say, well, there's no one else out there. Well, any given weekend during duck season, there are people out there going to and from the same boat landing that you're going from, and we need to be mindful of that. So once you get to your spot or you're getting close and you want to use some light or a handheld spotlight to make sure that you're not hitting your blind or you're finding the right honey hole, if you will, that's fine. But when you're going from point A to point B, if you can't see, slow down. Yeah. Make sure you have your navigation lights because there will be other boaters out there. Plus, you know, even more important to keep in mind is paddle craft are only required by law to have an available white light to avoid a collision. They can be out there paddling in the dark. So so many people are using skiffs and kayaks now to get to their spot. They're not required by law to have a light other than to avoid a collision. And if you're motoring hard to get to your duck hunting spot, running a little late kind of deal, that could be a tragedy. And so be aware, you know, you may very well have to slow down. And a lot of people travel for duck hunting. So if you're in unfamiliar waters, scout it. You know, go out there in the daylight and see where you're going. No different than walking to your bow stand or doing anything. If it's the first time you're doing it, you probably shouldn't do it full speed. But boat lights is a big one, and we're really starting to see people take full advantage of those LED light bars, which is great to get to your spot, but not so good for getting from point A to point B.
Oh, man. Well, you know, water temperatures, you know, it's... They go down.
Yeah.
And that really makes a, you know, falling out of the boat.
Yeah, it's something a problem. Something we need to be aware of. I mean, you never know it now. We're, you know, in that first week in September and we're still at 80, 90 degrees. But anyone that's been around Wisconsin any length of time knows it's not going to be all that long until that water is cold. And hypothermia sets in very quickly. Once that water temperature drops, and you may only have a matter of minutes, and especially late season waterfowl hunting, you know, you get in October, November, the water is definitely going to be cold. And if you go in the water, you have to try your hardest to get out as soon as you can. Stay with the boat. You know, the waders are going to insulate you, but they're going to act as an anchor. They're going to fill with water and they're going to pull you right to the bottom. So if you are wearing waders, try getting them off and stay with the boat. We can emergency crews can get and find boats far easier than we can find people in the water. If you're not wearing your life jacket, this really increases the risk of serious injury, serious hypothermia risk, because you're going to have to expel that much more effort to keep afloat. So again, it's just, it all circles back to wear your life jacket. But water temperatures are huge, you know, with waterfowl hunters. I mean, I remember some hunts where I was asking my dog to go out and retrieve ducks, and when she got back, she was full of icicles. The water was cold. I don't want to go in there. You know, and luckily, that Labrador loved doing it. But, yeah, we had life jackets, boat lights, water temperatures, bad weather. I mean,
we're going to be talking about bad winter from the Armistice Day storm. That'll be coming up in maybe 15 minutes or so with Tim Isley. So looking forward to talking about that, that bad weather. So John from Waterloo shot an email to us. Please answer the question, what is the most stable small boat design? He was under the impression a flat bottom boat is much more stable and than all the other designs.
You know, I wouldn't disagree that a flat bottom boat is probably more stable, but it's definitely going to depend on the beam, the width of the boat. You know, a narrow flat bottom boat, our first caller was saying that, you know, a muskie would be bigger than the width of the boat. While it's probably more stable than a canoe or a kayak, it's not stable. It's definitely not one of those boats that you're going to dance a jig on the seat and stay afloat. So it's all going to come back to that hull design. I mean, if you have a 9-foot wide flat bottom, that thing's not tipping over.
No.
Now it might sink. I mean, you fill it with water in rough seas, but that's going to be about as stable as you can get. So a lot of it isn't necessarily the hull design or the, you know, kayak versus canoe versus flat bottom versus V bottom. It has more to do with that width. So you may have a very shallow draft flat bottom boat that's very narrow, and that's going to be tippy as compared to a very wide flat bottom boat, and you're not tipping it over.
No, you're not going to tip one. It's something that wide. But then again, they're harder to... The reason that more people don't have them is that they're harder to get into those spots.
And it's going to depend on where you need to get to, what platform you're going to utilize. Because, yeah, we're like Larry and I, we've talked of... I work most of my career in Green Bay, Lake Michigan. I can get by with a pretty big boat. But I've also grew up on like the headwaters of the Fox River, where there's not a lot of water in there ever, let alone to get to your duck hunting spot or hunting Pine Island area of Columbia County, where it's backwater Wisconsin River sloughs, and that's just it. And it's all to each his own and what you're comfortable with. I mean, I don't like tippy boats. I'm not a fan of going out in a kayak,
no.
Especially with my dog. I mean, I just... She's too much of a knucklehead to do that. But on the other hand, I do like shooting ducks. So I've come up with different platforms that work.
Well, we've been having a little bit of problem with our phones. So we've had some trouble getting folks online, but I think we may have that figured out now. You can join in. Number to call 800-642-1234, or you could email us to ideas@wpr.org. Mike in West Allis?
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I was just commenting on the guy who called in about the John boat and the general discussion about flat bottom boats. You know, there's a whole bunch of aftermarket stuff that you can acquire pretty cheaply, either through, you know, Cabela's or Amazon, to stabilize these boats. They're just very small, very self-contained outriggers that mount to the sidewalls of whatever type of, but they could even be a canoe. And they provide a couple of different things that are really useful. The biggest one by far is the stability. The second piece is that if you do go into the water, you have a way out. You have a bar you can grab onto, and then you have a 2-point, you know, flotation then that you can lift up from. And the last part is that you have a place where you can mount some lights that are more spread out, so that if you need to have some illumination, you know, that they are far enough apart that, you know, somebody would recognize that there is something out there and not just a single point of light.
Yeah.
The other part I wanted to say real quick was, is that that whole thing about hypothermia, it doesn't have to be cold water. It doesn't even need to be, you know, all that chilly. It just has to be that you're wearing blue jeans and, you know, you get wet. If you get wet and you're wearing blue jeans, there was a thing by the National Forest Service, went back and looked at all of the folks who had died in Yosemite, and they found that about 80% of them had died because they were wearing blue jeans when it rained. And that was it. They got hypothermia. It cooled down their legs, cooled down their femoral artery, and that was it. They died right there in the woods.
Oh. Well, I tell you what, Mike, thanks a lot for calling. Comments, Darren, on Mike's comments.
I agree 100%. I mean, there are so many options out there for paddle craft or even you know, aftermarket pontoons that you can put on your boat to increase some flotation and hold them higher up in the water and increase the stability. There's all sorts of inventions that people have come up with to keep people safe on the water. I appreciate the comments. I mean, that's just it, is there may be some hunters out there or even paddle sport enthusiasts that aren't aware that stuff's on the market, and you definitely can find it. And I agree with the hypothermia. I mean, we talk cold water merely because that's what we're going to experience more so. And well, hypothermia certainly could be in 90 degree weather and 70 degree water. I think it's going to be a lot more prevalent in those colder waters in the fall. It's not going to take as long to get that body temperature to drop when you're in 35 degree water.
Yeah, absolutely. Frank in Duluth, Minnesota. Do we have Frank there?
Yes. Hello.
Hi,
can
Frank.
You hear me?
Yes. Yeah. What's on your mind?
All right, well, this is a really, really good program on duck hunting safety. My brother and I have hunted ducks, well, not recently, but when we were in high school, we hunted the late season diver ducks, and we had a lake that we hunted all the time. We had a blind out there that we had a reflector on it, so we could find it dark. And a big comment I want to make is that when you're driving a boat in a pitch black and there's big waves, it's a totally different experience than being in a boat when you can see what's going on. So you don't have the perception of when a wave is coming. We had a V-bottom fishing boat that we had a little slip made for the blind. We had no problem doing it. But the thing we noticed and realized, and many people may not, is that cold water has much more energy. When it slaps the side of the boat, boy, it slaps. And we noted that particularly in that cold water, we hunted right up to ice up. In fact, we went out there some days where we had to break through skim ice to get there. But the cold water feature is very, cold water can be cold water. Hypothermia can be there for sure. But that cold water has much more energy to slap the side of your boat. So be careful about that.
All right. Thanks for calling. Appreciate your call. A comment there, Darren?
I agree. The show is doing good. like Larry and I were talking, I could talk duck hunting all day long. I mean, I love duck hunting, and to get different perspectives on different items of a sport I love is great. And I mean, cold water is just that. I mean, it's dangerous from all different perspectives. And even just if you do go in, I mean, hypothermia alone, just the shock factor on the system. You know, you figure your body's, 97.6 or something along there, you know, 98, whatever the 97 number is for your body temperature, and you go into that cold water, your first reaction is a big gasp, which ultimately is, if you're underwater and you do a big gasp, leads to big problems.
I was talking to a DNR safety guy, this is some years back, but he was telling me about finding someone who had drowned, and actually several people in the early spring where the people still had their hats on.
Yep.
They hadn't, I mean, it was so, it sort of froze them in place and they couldn't even struggle enough to get their hat off.
Yep. Yeah. And I unfortunately have been part of some of those recovery efforts in my career. And that just, that much more important to take those safety precautions and accidents happen. But so much of the stuff that we deal with as conservation wardens or first responders when it comes to boating related incidents are preventable. Don't overload your boat. Don't go out in the horriblest weather. I mean, as a duck hunter, I'd like to go out on those rainy days. It's just a good duck hunting day. But we need to think about this too, that even if you've traveled a long distance to get, you're on a hunting trip, you need to be smart about it. And when you get to the boat landing and you can see the waves crashing over the breakwall and you're going out in that knowingly small boat, borderlining on overloaded, might have to think twice about that. You know, let the waves calm down. Maybe you don't go out for sunrise, but especially late season diver hunting, the divers are going to fly all day. You don't need to be the first one out there. As a matter of fact, when I've diver hunted, I like getting out there like at 10 o'clock in the morning. I don't have to get up early. And they're still flying just fine.
Kevin from Oshkosh called me, couldn't stay with us. He says he spent his whole life duck hunting. It's important to have a tight belt on your waders. It'll help them float.
It might help them float. It might slow down the water.
It'd have to be really tight to keep it out.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I suppose that's sort of like the life-saving technique that I've seen of, you know, filling up your, taking off your jacket and filling it up with air and using it sort of as a life preserver. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, neoprene, you know, generally is what a lot of waders are made out of, and neoprene is inherently buoyant. So it is going to help. And keep them up too when your shells weigh them down. But I don't know if I would rely on that as my 100% safety measure.
How can people train their dogs to be safe boaters?
A lot of time in the field, a lot of time, break them into it slow. I've had a number of dogs. One is absolutely horrible. She just isn't going to get it. And then I had one that would lay right on the floor. A lot of tricks, find a rummage sale and get a couple tractor inner tubes and find somebody with a small little John boat and just get him used to that bounce. You know, have you inflated, you know, lay the boat across the tractor inner tubes and it's going to mimic mm-hmm. what it's going to be in a boat. Take them out in the boat, a lot, you know, it's sort of like, getting them to retrieve. You know, you have to understand, you know, there's a couple of things that you never brag about in hunting, and that's how good you shoot and how good your dog is, because they're both going to make you look foolish at some point. Remember, the dog's a dog, so you can train and train and train, but if this is the first time you take them out in the boat and experience this, they're not going to behave the way you want them to, and then you're going to be that guy yelling across the marsh at your dog, and just a lot of preseason prep. Repetition, repetition. Keep it fun for them. Give them a treat when they do good. Goes all towards dog training.
And another thing that we haven't talked about is what should somebody do? You're out and you see another boater in distress. I've had that situation myself where I think I saved a guy's life. Are there any special precautions or anything?
Well, you know, I would hope that if any one of us saw somebody, you know, in dire, you know, distress like that, people in the water, people, you know, something that's life-threatening, that we would all respond. I mean, we're all human beings. I would hope we would take that. But with that, I would caution people. Don't do any more than you're comfortable. And, you know, I think back to old trainings and lifeguard stuff of reach, go, kind of, you know, never go in the water. That's where I'm trying to go with this, is don't go in the water. Reach something for them. Use your life jacket. Give them a throwable. Maybe you have a dock line that you can attach to tie a quick knot on a seat cushion and toss that out to them so you can reel them in. Try to get them out of the water, but don't go in the water yourself. It may look like that's the only availability, when people are drowning, they're going to grasp for anything, and there's a high likelihood that they're going to unintentionally drown you. So people in distress, help them. At minimum, call 911. Get first responders going. You know, our warden service, we keep our boats going till ice up for this very reason. sheriff's departments, police departments, fire departments that have boats. Get, you know, if you see this, help 911 and then get them to shore. You know, they're probably, you know, hunting season, they're going to need to get warm. So probably have an ambulance waiting at the boat landing. But don't go in the water. Call 911, get emergency crews coming, and do as much as you can while still keeping yourself safe.
And Tom wonders if you could just review the rules for who yields on the water, power vessels, non-powered.
Okay. Generally speaking, the boat that is the less maneuverable boat and that's the smaller boat has the right of way. So power boat versus paddlecraft. Paddlecraft is going to have the right of way. Freighter versus motorboat. Freighter can't move. If you're head on going against the freighter on the shipping channel in Green Bay, you're going to lose. They are not going to move. They have the right of way. Law enforcement boats always. So if a law enforcement boat has the blue lights flashing and siren, just like on the highway, they have the right of way. But generally your paddle craft are going to have the right of way because they're small. They may be maneuverable as far side to side, but they really don't have the ability to get out of the way. You need to give them, you don't have to stay behind them or stay in front of them, but you have to maintain your course and speed if you're going to pass them and do it respectfully, because if you're in a power boat, you're going to generate in a bigger wake than that, and they just need to be aware of it. Otherwise, you know, the general rule of thumb as far as power boat to power boat is the boat on the right has the right of way. You know, if you're coming, and there's a bunch of degrees of aft, you know, so many degrees aft of port beam kind of thing or whatever, but the boat on the right is generally going to have the right of way. The boat on the right is going to see that green navigation light as compared to the boat on the left is going to see the red navigation light. Hope that answers this question.
It does. You did a great job as always is the case, Darren. I want to thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. It's a treat, and I hope we have you back.
Snowmobile season's right around the corner.
Lieutenant Darren Kuhn, our guest today, boating law administrator in the Division of Public Safety and Resource Protection for the Wisconsin DNR. Well, coming up, we're going to continue to talk a bit about duck hunters, but what happened to some duck hunters a long time back? Many of them died in a sudden storm, and Tim Isley has written about it and will be our guest next to talk more about that. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network.